This Week in Retronauts, Samus It Ever Was. Hi everyone, welcome to Retronauts episode... keep forgetting to look it up. 7,000,003. I am Jeremy Parrish, as you know from the past 7,000,002 episodes. And I am here in a very professional recording studio, recording in person, once again with other Retronauts type people. Please, everyone, you're all veterans of the show. Please introduce yourself. Let's go around, starting with the far end of the table.
Hi, it's Ray Barnholtz, the baby. I don't know.
I'm the baby? Baby Metroid.
Yeah, right.
Hi, it's Shubham Putt. Metroids look a lot like Hadoukens turned sideways.
That's a very interesting observation. Probably a total coincidence.
Completely.
And also...
this is Shane Bettenhausen. I'm so happy to see you old-timers. I love all of you.
You're supposed to say, remember me?
Remember me from one of yours?
20 years ago? You got to put your visor up and say, remember me?
Remember me?
That's right.
One of yours
It wasn't 20. It was 15 years ago.
It's been a long time. Anyway, yes, all Retronauts veterans here to talk about Metroid, a topic that we have talked about before on the show, but... unexpectedly, Nintendo said, hey, we're going to make another one. And not only that, but it's the one that they almost announced like 15 years ago.
Wild.
It's pretty wild, yeah. Shane, you were at EGM back in those days. You remember the press sheet.
What's weird about Metroid Dread, I'll say, is that like it was kind of this myth. Like some people saw it on a sizzle reel running in their booth, but it wasn't part of their press conference.
I don't remember ever seeing it on a sizzle
reel. You and I never saw it, but like
they saw Scourge Hive is what they saw.
It's maybe apocryphal, but like...
No, I was... Okay, so the Ziff Davis booth that year...
you were working in those.
Yes.
It was like a terrarium.
It was the one up
was
the one
up fish?
Terrarium. It was the fishbowl.
Yeah, you were stuck in this hot terrarium.
It was awful.
Back in the day when you would race to write things up.
Yeah, yes. I got really sick that year.
Man, I was stuck in the terrarium uploading pictures for the entire span of E3.
So anyway, relevant to Metroid, that was the year that their pre-E3 sheet that they sent out to the magazines was like, here's a list of all the games we're going to have. And it said Metroid Dread for
DS.
Was
it with two Ds at the end? Or does that make that up?
Okay. My brain remembers it as D-R-E-D-D, but everyone else is like D-R-E-A-D.
No, I remember that too, so I think you and I remember.
I think D-R-E-D-D is copyright by Judge Dredd.
Might be. that might be why it disappeared. I don't know. But because of that, I was like, you know, buzzing with excitement for the prospect of Metroid. So
it's always been special.
Yeah. Like, well, finally, you know, there's a this was 2005, so the DS was like 6 months old. It was like, this is the reason... that people are going to want
to DS. It was 6 months old and kind of not the greatest launch.
Well, the Lite was on the way.
Nintendo. You like Steel Diver.
The Lite... No, I didn't really. That was 3DS anyway.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Okay, so yes, at the Fishbowl, I saw that someone at the magazine like showed me that list, even though they weren't supposed to, and I saw it, and I was like, yes, I blogged about it. I was like, there's something dreadfully exciting coming that's going to make everyone want a Nintendo DS. And then the event came... They did their, you know, press conference, no mention of Metroid. So our terrarium, the one-up terrarium, was like a two-story tall booth that had the terrarium, but then there was a meeting space upstairs that looked out over the show floor, and our booth was diagonal from Nintendo's booth. And you could sit up there and see their sizzle reel trailers running the entire time.
Never was on there.
And I sat there hawk-eyed every chance I could, watching for any sign of Metroid Dread, because they would refresh the trailers throughout the course of the show. Like, every day it was a slightly different mix. And there was something, and I was like, wow, what is that? That looks just like Metroid. Oh my god, it's like isometric now.
That sounds like Rear Window.
Which game was some third-party game?
It was Scourge Hive. Which was a very good game.
Oh, the European game.
It's not European, it was American.
Didn't you give that a high rating?
I liked it, I gave it a pretty good rating. I wouldn't say
but
like
it was not
high.
Samus.
It was not Samus. It was some lady with long red hair and a ponytail that she could like flop around. And it had the whole Metroid Fusion thing going on, though, because she was infected with something. I don't know, there's actually an episode where I interviewed the developers of Scourge Hive from, I can't remember the name of the... the studio. But yes, that was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago on Retronauts. So check that episode out. It's in the archives. But yeah, Metroid Dread never showed up, and there was never another official mention of it from Nintendo until Metroid Prime 3.
Metroid Dread always felt to me like
trolling everyone.
It felt like one of those things you would see in the early 80s when you're looking at the back of a magazine and it's got like forthcoming game for the Atari, and it's got like a random title that's got a screenshot, but there's nothing beyond that.
That reminds me of when I sent in $49 to buy Donkey Kong Returns from Play It Again Games, and 2 years later they sent me back my money.
Yeah. So Metroid Dread until recently has been the Bibis one of Metroid.
And I'll say, the second they announced it, it was like, that was pretty clever, because like all of us who are old school veteran losers, we were instantly like, oh my god, Nintendo remembers, thank you.
Nintendo never throws anything away.
Right.
It's
kind of like Disney.
Yeah. Like this game, I think, is actually going to be totally different from what Metroid Dread would have been had it come out for Nintendo DS.
They just had the URL sitting around, so like, we need to find something to put there.
But I'll say, it's a really unique IP in their you know, pantheon. Like, if you look at the things they've done with all their franchises, Metroid is kind of special. I mean, there's ones that barely got touched, like Kid Icarus, but Metroid has been returned to again and again in unique and different ways.
Actually, what I want to ask to kind of kick this episode off, I guess we've kind of already kicked it off, but I do want to ask everyone, where do you feel Metroid fits into the Nintendo pantheon? Because, you know, it's I feel like it's a series that has a lot of cachet among a certain audience that's not necessarily the audience Nintendo really wants to cultivate. So it seems like it should be a bigger deal than it actually is.
Well, to me, it's like always been a B franchise, but it's my favorite Nintendo first party B franchise. And like, I think if you look back to NES era, you know, by the time it launched, obviously Mario and Zelda were the two biggest ones. Zelda was pretty new. Mario had been established. And like, when you bought an NES back in that era, 85, 86 to 87, you know.
Zelda and Metroid came out within a month of each other in Japan, in the US, actually.
But I was there, and I remember Zelda was a huge deal.
You were there, carefully watching.
So yeah. I was there.
At the age of 8.
So, yeah, so I'll tell my Metroid. Well, we should all tell our Metroid origin stories. It's fun. People like that.
Well, we'll do that.
So, you know, I had NES, and I had Super Mario Brothers. I had The Legend of Zelda. Legend of Zelda had a really cool, weird commercial. You've talked about that. The gold cartridge. It was special. I remember as a little kid, be like 10 years old, like, this is special. And it was amazing.
So
right?
You're saying that Metroid is a B franchise because Zelda came in a gold box.
It did.
And Metroid came in a silver box.
Zelda had a battery, came in a gold box, had its own commercial. What's weird about Metroid is Nintendo launched it and Kid Icarus together, and they marketed them together. And, like, at that time, I was like, oh, these both look interesting, and they're kind of taking elements of Super Mario Brothers and Zelda and combining them into this, like, 2D exploration adventure. One's sci-fi, one's, like, mythology fantasy. And, like, I ended up not being able to buy either because I was a kid, I had no money, right? Like... And my friend got Kid Icarus. I went to his house and played Kid Icarus. Thought it was really cool. And then one day around Thanksgiving, the year the Metroid came out, it was my cousins who were younger, who didn't have an NES, came to show up for Thanksgiving dinner. And they're like, hey, Shane, you have an NES. We found a cartridge on the side of the road.
What?
And handed me a Metroid cartridge. This is what Metroid cost, $49.99, right?
It did not cost $49.99.
$39.99?
It was $29.99.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
It was the first game I bought, and I remember.
That and Kid Icarus were both...
Nintendo.
Are you sure they weren't $39?
Yes. No, Nintendo games were very pretty inexpensive.
You're wrong. Zelda was $49.
I'm absolutely not.
Zelda was $49.99. I was there.
You are welcome to go look at circulars. You're welcome to go
Sometimes
look at
Sometimes it depends on the retailer.
It does depend on the retailer.
I remember buying Zelda Gold Circle for $49.99.
Well, your retailer ripped you off. The first game that actually hit the $40 mark at budget retailers like Target or Walmart was Double Dragon.
Huh. Double Dragon.
And then
I remember
Super Mario 2 came out.
$59.99 for Double Dragon.
Man, you just got jobbed.
Did you live in Canada?
I lived in Kentucky. Anyway, I do remember Metroid.
Canadian type.
I do remember Metroid and Kid Icarus were cheaper than Zelda. I do remember that, right? But it was still amazing. I got a free copy of Metroid from my cousins.
That's actually rad.
And I put it in my NES and it didn't work. But that's when, like, if you blew on it really, really hard, it would work. And that's how I found Metroid. So Metroid was already weird, bizarre, austere, and strange. So I was like, predisposed to be like, this is special, I got it for free. And then it was amazing, I loved it.
That's fair.
Interesting.
So how did you first discover Metroid?
I mean, I discovered Metroid the way so many people did, which is going to your friend's house and sitting there and looking at the new game that their cool parents got that your cool parents would never get you. And it was wild because, like, I was used to, I mean, I'd come from, like, Atari and Nintendo and stuff. And so I'm used to, like, spare black backgrounds and super minimalist soundtracks. But this game let you go left and right.
Right. And you had to go left to go right.
You had to, yeah. And, like, the fact that you had to go backwards the first time to get the morphball, and I was like, whoa.
But it didn't really tell you anything.
No, it didn't. Great. The game was, like, it was one of the first real, like, for me, one of my first experiences of emergent gameplay. Mm-hmm. Of, like, okay, I go forward, the door's blocked. Okay, well, I'm going to, can I go backwards? Is this allowed? I went backwards. I'm like, I can go backwards. And then you're jumping, you figure it out, and you're evolving, and you're growing with this game. And I mean, it was stunning to me, but I was always really, really bad at this game because it required reflexes. It required a lot of hand-eye coordination. Well, and
the jumping is weird.
The jumping is, even now, the jump physics and it slows down in weird places. Yeah. It's got weird gravity.
Yeah, the parabola of your jump is strange.
And if you, like, jump normally versus you hold it and she spin jumps. And I found that early on, even then, Metroid was a game I like watching really good people play more than I like playing myself. Which makes GDQ all the better, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like a perfect opportunity for GDQ. Hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at these old flyers, and even Toys R Us was selling Zelda for $38.
Wow.
Yep. Well, you know, so your retailers
in $1986, that's like $80 now.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah, that's right.
If you completely change the goalpost, you're absolutely right. Ray, how did you first stumble across Metroid?
I'm not even totally clear on how I encountered the first one. I probably rented it, but I did end up owning the re-release with the ugly yellow box art.
Oh, yeah.
But, hey, I guess I liked it enough to own it. But I don't think I loved it that much. I'll say probably my real origin began with Metroid 2.
Mm-hmm.
I got that on Game Boy.
I shudder.
I loved it at the time because Spider-Ball, still the best power-up in that whole series, I'm going to say. And it was really fun just tooling around in that game. Because, you know, I was pretty little. Still impressed by big graphics on Game Boy. Game Boy in general. So
they were very big graphics.
It's an ambitious Game Boy game for when it came out.
Yeah. I feel like, wasn't that really hard to play, though? Because, like, you had such a small field of view.
Yeah, you were very large on the screen.
It was very adaptable.
And it was blurry.
Yeah.
They, you know, they designed the game around the limitations of the system. So it plays differently than other Metroid games do. As a result of that, but you know, it was definitely very technically impressive. Like, wow, I can't believe they did this, but they did. They did that.
It's like more than Metroid 1, though. Like, what impressed me was the first time I saw Super Metroid, because like everybody was like, "Oh, look, Super Mario Brothers." And I'm like, it looks like Mario 3. It's fine, whatever. But when you see Samus and the floors on Super Metroid, kind of have those like curvy, they're not just straight blocks and stuff. And you see her running up this hill, and the animation and everything. I was like, oh my god, they can run diagonally. This is blowing my mind.
This episode is not about Super Metroid, but Super Metroid is
No, it's about all the Metroid games.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Well,
it's the Metroid legacy.
Okay, then we'll get to Super Metroid, but I'll say, back to Metroid 1. By the when it came out, I don't think any of us, when we first played it, had you seen Alien? Or Aliens?
No.
At the age of like 6 or 7?
I was 10.
I was too tiny.
Right, I was 10.
I had heard of Alien.
Yeah, I knew what Alien was.
Because by reputation with my family, because apparently my uncle watched that after, like, they you know, had dinner, they had Italian, they had spaghetti, and then they saw the movie where they're sitting around eating spaghetti before the chestburster flies out, and that, like, made him sick to his stomach, and he can't eat spaghetti.
Yeah, so I hadn't seen yet Alien, and Aliens wasn't even out, but I was, you know, tangentially
Aliens
where...
Aliens was out.
Aliens came out in 88.
It came out in 86.
Oh, you're right. Okay. I hadn't seen anything. I was 10. But I was, like, tangentially aware that I kind of knew that Metroid was a little bit based on this thing. But, like, by the time I saw Alien, which was, like, a year or two after playing Metroid, it was like, oh, and I made that connection that, like, the Chozos are clearly based on H.R. Giger. You know, like, the Alien inspiration is there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they kind of just have that Giger-esque look to them where it's, like, sort of biomechanical, stilted, you know, frozen in a weird position. Like, the Metroids themselves, even though they have kind of, like, the parasitic mechanism of the alien, they don't really look like the alien. They look like jellyfish.
But I remember becoming aware of that as a kid, thinking it was super cool. And, like, once I saw Alien, it's all, like, the weird, austere, kind of creepy version of the future. It's like, I think the DNA between Alien and Metroid is there. I just want to point that out.
No, absolutely. And, you know, in one of those kind of cosmic coincidences, Metroid shipped in Japan about 4 or 5 weeks after the movie Aliens came out in the US. I don't know when Aliens actually made it to Japan. So obviously there was no like looking at Aliens and saying, oh, we should make a game like that. But more like, I imagine Aliens came out and they were like, oh, well, okay, I guess our game is like either super relevant or super irrelevant at this point.
Yeah. And I think that loneliness, that isolation, the weirdness, all that's part of Metroid. And I remember playing through it and feeling that that was different than the other games I played, that I really felt alone and kind of like in this weird place. And it was, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. Yeah, it was different.
I think Metroid owes a lot to kind of the Japanese PC gaming side of things, where you had, you know, games like Xanadu and Sorcerian, where you are just kind of by yourself, and there's a sense of a world, and maybe, you know, some of the games have NPCs, but it's really just kind of on you to figure everything out, and it can be very inscrutable. And there is this kind of, not austerity, but a sense of melancholy and a sort of sparseness of design.
Yeah, there's kind of this weird, like, ennui around Metroid 1 that, like, I've always enjoyed, you know? Yeah.
It's just such a desolate and empty game.
Yeah.
And it's like so atmospheric in such a weirdly scary way. Like, you don't know where you're going, you don't know what's going on. You've had a lot of very few context cues. It's like one of the first games that really had like almost like zero UI to speak of except for your life bar and like missile gun.
Well, lots of visual things like the statues, you know, and stuff.
The spikes curving and the little piece of crap that were just floating around. Like, the monster design, and except for like the bosses and the Metroids themselves, was not inspired. Well,
and then the music is just so sparse and strange just blips and bloops. Dour and bleeps and bloops.
It's got a few places where there's bleeps and bloops. That's in the statue rooms, but the rest of it is actually a much more
It does have
elaborate
minor keys. I just think about like a lot of like it's dark. And
it
weird.
Still is just creepy.
It is, but it actually had a very unusually like robust soundtrack for a game of that vintage. It really did a lot to sell the kind of spaces you were in.
As a kid, the soundtrack definitely stood out to me.
The thing I was saying is, like, my context for Metroid was less about Alien and about, like, those kind of movies, and more, like, arcade games like Space Invaders or things like that, because that kind of, like, the design of these monsters felt a lot like Millipede or Space Invaders or a little
it's fuzzy interesting kind you of, say like, that, because you run back and forth, you can lock your shot vertically, and it is a bit like Space Invaders at times, when you're, like, shooting things above you.
It
just kind of gave me this, like, that's, I guess, the context I was, responding to with this game is, these monsters just look like the same kind of things that are just inexorably coming down. And it had that same kind of vibe.
But also, the progression of abilities is, like, and this is probably the NES game. You know, even though you get lots of things in Zelda, you know, you're getting heart containers, you're getting items. But in Metroid, your actual gameplay gets so much more fun as you progress. You get high jump, as you get screw attack, as you can, like, freeze enemies and jump on them. Like, the true gameplay of Metroid, and even more so Super Metroid, is revealed as you play.
Yeah, a big thing about what made this game interesting is that it gave you kind of the suite of powers and inventory that you had to manage in Zelda, but there was no management to it.
Right.
Like, the only management really was swapping the wave beam for the ice beam.
The fact that there's no subscreen is kind of impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just seamless. So everything you get kind of has multiple purposes. Every weapon has a function as a key or an ability to, you know, give you more ability to navigate.
Yeah, think about how deftly it uses the limited inputs of the NES controller to give you lots of moves, you know?
Yeah, like, he used every button on that thing, didn't he?
Like, select
to shoot your missile.
Like, just like something like the screw attack. I remember when I first got that, it was so rewarding as an attack, you know? Because the whole game, you've been wanting to have some ability like that where you can plow forward and attack things like that.
Yeah. The morph ball and bombs, though, will always stick out to me. It's just like the iconic thing about, like, that game.
Right. Well, and specifically, once you realize there were all these little tiny hidden secrets to go get some missiles or an energy tank where you're, like, you want to try every wall. You want to, like, and that, you know, that leads to, like, the bugs. Like, I think we all have played where you, like, get up in the ceiling and you're, like, kind of glitching out the game. And that seemed weird and special.
It felt like Mario, though. Like, when you go up to the ceiling to try to get to the warp zone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the first time you get a bomb jump to work is such a rewarding feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And then like, you learn to stack
like
it.
Like the rhythm of that. Yeah. I do remember, like, as a kid, before school, like, trying to bomb up the entire, well, you know, giant chasm or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
And then you fall, and you're like, God, I have to spend another 45 minutes to climb back up.
Well, the interesting thing about the game is that, you know, the bomb jump you're talking about, where you can propel yourself kind of gradually upward, I don't think that the game was built around that exactly. Like, there was no expectation that you would do that, but the designers definitely understood that you could do it, and there are certain places where you would think, oh, I can sequence break here by bomb jumping, that they actually kind of make that impossible. Like, the Varia is contained pretty close to the beginning of the game, and all you need to get there really is just a missile to break down doors, but you also need the high jump to be able to clear this gap. Mm. And if you think, well, there's this gap here, but I can bomb jump over there. No, because the bricks lining the bottom of that gap are destructible bricks. So when you bomb them, they shatter. Clever. And then it takes them, you know, like 10 seconds to regenerate. So in that time, unless you're really good at keeping yourself aloft on your first try and really getting that rhythm, it's pretty much impossible to get the Varia early. So you really do need to come back with the high jump boots and or, you know, some other way to kind of get up there. So there is, yeah, there's definitely like this awareness on behalf of the developers that you can cheat that way.
And I mean, the bombs don't hurt you when they explode.
Right.
Which is a very conscious decision, which is a very, it gives this whole just maneuverability, like, and this just new way of exploring this game.
Yeah, I mean, the bombs are so integral to getting through the planet and breaking walls and stuff. If they hurt you, that would really put a crimp in the game because you just spend so much time laying down bombs. It's not like Zelda where, you know, every bomb you kind of have to ration out because you have a limited number. Here you just have infinite bombs and you're kind of expected to just like place them everywhere to discover like, oh, this is a passage in the floor that I did not realize was there, but I bombed it open.
It felt like Zelda where you sit there and use a candle to burn every tree on the stage until you find the one that gives you the staircase.
A little less annoying.
Yeah. Zelda becomes less annoying once you realize there's only going to be one secret per screen.
Yeah, but how long does it take you to get there?
I don't know exactly. Like, I definitely did the you know, oh, I got the magic candle, so now I can burn everything, but after a while, I realized, like, there's only ever one thing on any screen, so I'm not going to burn every single
bush. 10
rupees,
not worth it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yes.
You know, it's interesting, when I finally got a Famicom Disk System before they all started dying from our dead rubber bands, I was a little disappointed that the music in Metroid wasn't way better. Because, you know, some games, there's like a whole other channel of audio and the music sounds way better. Not so much in Metroid.
Sometimes the music sounds way worse, like Castlevania 2. Yeah. So, no, Metroid uses the extra sound channel for
sound effects.
Yeah.
Right, and they're weird and different. Yeah. That is interesting, but yeah.
And, well, the title screen music is enhanced. Mm, it's better, I would say, than the American version.
No, it's a disc system game.
Yeah. Yeah, it started out on the Famicom Disk System. It launched like 6 months after the disk system itself. And Nintendo was really firing on all cylinders at that point. They had Zelda, and then Nazo Nomura Samejo, and then I think something else, volleyball, pro wrestling, Metroid, all in 1986.
Did Paul Tana's Mirror come out at the same time? Or?
Lost Levels, Mario 2, what's that?
In Japan, was Paul Tana's Mirror the same time?
It was
time?
The end of 1986.
Was it the same
December.
Time, though?
No, it was like...
No, it's after Metroid, because we were talking about this. We had a Kid Icarus episode, and it was basically like the team was... There's a different team making Kid Icarus, and some of the Metroid people were called in to finish it, basically.
Because I think it was a disservice to Kid Icarus to launch them simultaneously here. But
I don't know. I feel like they were kind of going for different things.
Yeah, but among my friend circle, Kid Icarus was always like the second.
Oh, man, I loved Kid Icarus, though. He had arrows, and he said everything. I mean, look, Captain N was very influential amongst my playground, and we definitely ran around saying Icarus at the end of everything.
Captain N.
It was really cool, Icarus.
Well, bear in mind that Metroid, Zelda, and Kid Icarus all launched within like a span of a month here
in
the U.S.
Which is wild, right?
Yeah, but I don't think there was necessarily... I don't know. Not among anyone that I knew. Like, oh, they put these games out at the same time. That really sucks for this game that I don't like as much. It was just like you went to the store and there were new games there that you hadn't seen before, and you were like, well, this one looks interesting. I had never played Metroid before I bought it, but I always heard my friends talking about it, and talking about things like mini bosses and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, this sounds really intriguing.
Like, fake raid, what?
No, not even that, but just like the idea of mini bosses. And, you know, they were talking about how you had to fight these Metroids before they could drain you of your health. And it was very intriguing. So that, you know, when I saw that at the store and I had money for it, I was like, this is the game I'm going to buy. There were a lot of other choices, but there was something very alluring about one, the, you know, the sneaker, not the sneaker, the meat space conversation, you know, the playground talk.
Right.
Well, good thing after school or after
good
church.
Good thing you bought Metroid instead of Deadly Towers or Chubby Cherub.
Well, they didn't have a silver box.
So, well, if you love Chubby Cherub, you love Kid Icarus.
Right. So, same
that's thing. What they were banking.
Chubby Cherub too, Kid Icarus.
Oh my God.
So do you think, is there any like truth to that notion that Metroid was a game that was just more popular in the States than it was in Japan?
Yeah, I do think that's pretty well established. Metroid has never really struck me as being a huge thing over there. Like,
because even though this system was popular, like not everyone could play it, you know? Yeah.
Because it feels like it got a lot of cult cachet here compared to other places.
I mean, Nintendo did a good job of pushing it in Fun Club Newsletter and then Nintendo Power and Players, Official Players Handbook. Like, you know, they did a very good job of getting the word out to people like us that this was a cool new game and you should try it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Nintendo's lineup, you know, if you look at the way it's received in Japan, there's definitely like the games everyone loves, and then there's the games that are kind of like, well, those are more like for Americans, like Punch-Out. Even though that was, you know, a Japanese game released in Japan first, you know, when Little Mac was revealed for Smash Brothers, the message board conversations in Japan were all like, who the hell is this guy? Oh, he's being in a game that they like in America.
I mean, do you think Metroid outsold Nazunomura Samejo?
I could not say. I don't have any way to actually give an honest answer to that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it sold more because it, you know, Metroid went worldwide and
did Metroid get a Famicom cartridge re-release ever, like Castlevania did?
No, it didn't.
No,
it was just Zelda.
Yep,
wild
and Mario too.
USA.
But
yeah,
yeah. If we count that, yeah. No, there were only a few games that did that. I think.
It did get one of those
Bokutei
games.
Biomiracle Oopa also got that.
Oh.
Because that's a giant.
Just like when you think about Metroid gameplay, and like especially here, it just was so imaginative. It reminded me of a lot of like 1970s pulp sci-fi like books and stuff. It felt like the crowd that was super into D&D and stuff would really get into Metroid, especially just because it's an atmospheric astronaut type person, big bulky armor, shooting these like very Docksmith missiles.
Samus, he's so cool.
Right? And then like Justin best. Bailey, the code going around, you find it and you're like, wait,
is that
what?
His real name?
And I'll say that was kind of like back, you know, in the prehistoric era of media, that was kind of like a second hit of media. Once that got out, once it was like, oh, Metroid's a girl and there's a way to play where she's wearing a bikini, it definitely made the rounds through playgrounds across America.
Yeah, definitely did.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the first time you put in that code, you're like, there's no way some kid's name is the code. And it's like, oh my God. Well, I start off with Ice Beam and bikini, like, no armor.
I knew it before because I remember the first time I beat it, I got the bad ending and just the helmet came off, and then she played it again.
Did you get the ending where she turns her back on you and weeps?
I eventually got that ending, but that wasn't my first ending. My first ending was just the helmet come off, and then my second one was the good ending. And then like eventually I think I watched my sister play through it and she got the bad ending.
Yeah. Some of us scrubs never got the good ending, my friend.
I mean, you know, for me, the first time I beat Metroid, it took me months to get that
well,
game clear.
Multiple
endings. So I definitely got the crying Samus when it back to you.
That might have been my first NES game that had multiple endings, if I think about it.
Yeah, I think Mach Rider had multiple endings, but maybe that was just versus Mach Rider.
But yeah, that was a big deal.
That and Kid Icarus, the faster you complete the game,
Simon's Quest, multiple endings.
Yeah, but that was later.
You can die at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but the thing is, those were like things I discovered in Nintendo Power, because some of us were not blessed with the talent of gaming. And so like when I played Metroid, I always got like the fully armored Samus at the end, because it took me like 5 years to beat it. And I mean, that game is hard. That game is really, really hard.
It is.
And the chunks are so small. See,
that was the only game that I had for a while, so I got really good at it. I could beat it, you know, get the best ending without getting the Varia. So everything did double damage to me, and I was like, whoa, Samus is a brunette when she has her armor off. She's not supposed to have green hair.
You can do the Turian escape perfectly.
Yep.
Like,
yeah. Actually, that's not that hard now that I you know, am
right.
older.
As a kid, it freaked me out, but it's not that hard.
Yeah, it made me so nervous, and then, you know, you end up flooding it because you're shaking with anxiety.
I remember thinking that the climax of that game, the escape, that was all very, very new and exciting, you know.
Dude, the first time I beat Mother Brain, and then that timer comes on, and I'm like, what? No! And then I lost.
Yeah.
And I was just
that's bummer.
I've definitely seen the time bomb go off. But, you know, there's a way that you can jump and not spin. So once you figure out how to do that, you just kind of arc yourself in the air without spinning, and you have great control. But if you let yourself spin, then you're going to flop around. It's going to be bad. You'll slip when you land.
If you don't know it's coming and it's the first time it shows up, you're like, oh, God. And I'm already stressed from having just fought through the gauntlet, right, and getting through Mother Brain. I'm like, yeah, I did. There's more. No. What do I do?
But at least you don't have to fight anything during the escape
sequence.
Thank
God for that, man.
That could be really rough. You know, and every game kind of amplifies the escape sequence. It takes it to a new level.
They leaned into it too much.
You think so?
Yeah. It's like Super Metroid. No, it's right at the beginning. Metroid Prime. Oh, it's right at the beginning.
Well, Super Metroid does it twice. And the second one is like way more wild because you have to go through a lot more territory.
It's different.
But I have no complaints of how Super Metroid handles it. I do think they've returned to it a few more times after that. And it's getting kind of old.
Super Metroid.
I mean, Super Metroid, though, like, I appreciated the callback because when I saw it, I was like, oh, this reminds me of Metroid. It feels like I'm starting over at the end of the last game because I didn't know Metroid 2 had come out because I didn't have a Game Boy. And so just like seeing that there, and especially with the fancy new graphics, was like, wow. I mean, it's still hard and I still failed a bunch of times. But
I like the Metroid 2 escape sequence because it's the opposite of all the others. It's really relaxing. It's just you and the baby. There's no timer. You're just like blasting through. You've got the super beam, and you're just zapping through barriers and getting back to your ship, and the little baby's following along behind you.
Leisurely,
and there's kind of this peaceful music. Yeah, it really does kind of give it a different feel, a different vibe from all the other Metroid games. It'd be cool if Dread did something unexpected like that, where, you know, the whole game is about being chased, apparently. Take that away, and, you know, like, let everyone just kind of coast, you know, do a victory lap or something. Do donuts in the parking lot with Samus.
Your warm reminiscence about Metroid 2 makes me wish that they would make a remake for some platform that I could play and enjoy. Because I'll say I was heartbroken when Metroid 2 was announced as a Game Boy game. Because, you know, in 1988...
You do know that they made a remake of it.
They did, yeah.
Yeah. And you can play it on
3DS. I want a new remake. Like, another remake. Like, a 3D remake of it.
3D remake.
Yeah. It has 3D graphics.
I mean, like, no, like, I want a whole, like, a you want, huge like, remake of it. Like, Metroid Prime style remake of it. Like, a whole new, like...
And that's... Just play Metroid Prime.
They should put it in the Breath of the Wild.
I mean, it's a 3DS, right? The remake.
Samus Returns is pretty good. It's a much bigger game than Metroid 2. Like, it's...
I should revisit that remake, because I still feel heartbroken, because when the Game Boy 1 came out, I tried it.
You haven't played it, have you?
I started it. I should go back to it.
Alright, so before you're brokenhearted, wipe away your tears, go play Samus Returns and see what you think. It's polarizing.
It was better than
like
the Game Boy version.
People hate it.
Because everything's better than the Game Boy version. But that Game Boy version broke my heart back in the day. And like because that always left a bad taste in my mouth.
It's not that bad.
I mean, I was too young to care, so I loved it.
You're so big on the screen, and it kind of blurs all the time.
It was
whatever.
Weird. I mean,
the trick is to have played it after the Super Game Boy came out.
It is better on Super Game Boy.
Somewhat, yeah.
So, Ray, you were super excited for this when it came out, Metroid 2?
Yeah.
You bought it, like, day of?
Probably, yeah. Playing it in the car day of, yeah.
Sure. And you're like, I'm much happier searching for these 30 things than fighting 4 bosses.
I mean, it's... The point you gotta understand, young, I really like the Game Boy.
Like, I mean, as Game Boy games go, it's pretty good, but...
I like the bug hunt element. I mean, there's a lot of...
I don't like the bug hunt element.
There's a lot about Metroid 2 that just varies from series dogma, but that was how Nintendo did a lot of its sequels. It was like, well, we did the one thing, let's try something different. Well, okay, maybe we'll go back to the first thing.
I was like 14 or something when they came out, but I just felt like visually you could not convey cool alien worlds on the Game Boy. Like, it's never kind of like felt the same to me because of the visuals. frankly.
I'll grant that, you know, having it have a black background is not good for the Game Boy.
There's no backgrounds, really.
Right.
Yeah.
But just the fact that it's all black, when a lot of other games were deciding on the fact that, yeah, we need to compensate by having white backgrounds, right. Or, you know, and, you know, you can't do that with sci-fi stuff, obviously, if you're in space. You need some black backgrounds. So I guess they just forced it in with Metroid 2.
So with the limitations, maybe the level design's actually good, I just couldn't appreciate it back then. Is it?
It's okay.
It's better in the remake. Map is a lot better in the remake.
Like, were you able to finish Game Boy Metroid 2
back in the day? I don't think so, but I was always pretty bad at games back
then. Yeah,
I don't
think I knew anybody who finished Metroid 2, like, yeah, back in school days. Like,
I did.
You did? Okay.
But you didn't know me.
I didn't know you. But you finished right. It and loved it. Right. Like, this is the sequel I wanted. This is everything I wanted from Metroid 2.
I thought it was pretty neat. I didn't like it as much as the first Metroid, but I was like, okay, cool.
But, like, imagine if Zelda 2 had been a Game Boy game. I don't know. Like a full sequel, like... I guess I was upset that it was a full sequel for that platform. Because, like, yeah, Super Mario Land wasn't Super Mario Bros. 4.
Super Mario Land was barely Super Mario Bros. 1, to be fair.
True, but I guess I just felt like Metroid and Kid Icarus got kind of, like, downgraded on Game Boy. And, like, it kind of hurt those franchises for me back in the day at the time. I felt like Nintendo, like, did them dirty.
I mean, without knowing, you know, at the time Metroid 2 came out, without knowing that there was going to be a real-ass sequel in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, it was cool. It's just cool having a portable Metroid.
Yeah, at that point there were no guarantees of,
like, any sequels for anything.
It was better than the Castlevania Adventure, I guess.
Oh, by far, yeah, probably. Yeah, I guess, you know, Metroid 2, I enjoyed it, but at the same time, I was like, okay, that was fine, and I didn't really stop to consider that they would ever make more Metroid games. So when Super Metroid came along, I didn't actually realize it was going to exist until it was already out, which I was like, how did this sneak up on me? But it was a great surprise, you know? Like, hey, here's that game that you loved, and now it's on Super NES, and it looks really good.
Well, and as you jump to Super Metroid, I think that this is part of the narrative, because for me, Metroid 2 was such a disappointment that, like, as much as I love Metroid, Metroid 2 kind of, like, you know, sidetracked the franchise. And then when Super Metroid was announced, and it looked like a return to Metroid, but better, I was super excited. And then it was so amazing that... You know, there are only a few games where I've been that blown away, where, like, my expectations were high, but it was, like, you know, infinitely exceeded to where I thought, at the time, it was one of the greatest games ever made, clearly.
When I saw Super Metroid for the first time, I was, like, first off, stoked that Metroid came back, period. But when you just go through that intro sequence and you plug it in, the colors that they have for that first
the
level.
The colors, dude.
It just...
Well, but also, the fact that it has the intro sequence... That was pretty new. Like, to, like, start a game with this, like, framing sequence that's a throwback, that's, like, dramatic, that tells a story.
But even
any of that.
The rain that's coming down on your ship, I was just like, holy crap, look at this. I mean, it wasn't the first Super Nintendo games I'd ever seen. And so, like, that whole combination of, like, running up diagonally, being able to shoot in all different directions, having just the mobility and maneuverability, and the effects, the colors, I don't think Nintendo could ask for a better intro to their system.
Well, but what's interesting is it did kind of remind me of Super Mario World and Link to the Past, in that it, like, you know, it took all the things you liked about the first NES game and, like, blew it 10 times more.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and kind of put this framing, put this more serious approach to it. Yeah, it was... Yeah.
I mean, it's wild. 2021, we can look at Super Metroid and still think it looks fabulous.
It also seemed kind of serious and more adult than you would expect from Nintendo at the time, you know?
I don't know. The tone felt exactly like Metroid 1 to me. It's still very sparse and still very exploration heavy. I mean, like, the Metroid and Super Metroid, just the ideas there of being able to have this wide space to explore, go back and forth, get new items. I mean, the entire concept of the Metroidvania, right? Like, I love backtracking in games and re-exploring with new abilities to be able to open up new rooms. And being able to, like, go there, find a new item, and then say, like, all right, let me go backward and see what this unlocks. It was just super exciting to me, and I loved how vibrant Super Metroid made that compared to the original.
I mean, it gave you, like, four different colored doors instead of two.
Right?
That was wild.
Green ones are really cool.
Much like Metroid, you could play the game slightly to your own order, too. It was difficult if you did things slightly out of order, but you could, which I thought was cool.
I saw somebody do a reverse boss order on Super Metroid, and I'm like, That is beyond my ability to understand.
How do you even get to some of the later bosses like that?
I don't...
Like,
lots of game breaks.
I'm trying to imagine take on Ridley first.
It's
when
wild.
You have, like, nothing, because... Yeah, like, his whole thing is that he grabs you, and it's pretty much unavoidable, and then beats you with his tail. Like, how do you avoid that?
It's a real trip to watch this. It was a GDQ run, no less. And I was
of course.
I don't understand, like, what you did to this
I've
poor
game.
I've done
a boss out of order. I think I did the Space Pirates... For, you know, before I was supposed to or something one time, and it
the
was
pirate ship?
Yeah, the pirate ship, and it was much harder. It's super hard.
Yeah, I have this memory of, like, doing bosses, like, taking on bosses with weapons that I shouldn't have had at that point, but I can't remember. Like, I've tried to go back and repeat that, and I can't figure out how I would have done it. So maybe it's like a false memory. I don't know.
I can't believe how much they, like, double down on the depth of, like, this weird minutia to the systems of, like, these strange moves, all these, like, complicated maneuvers that you may or may not figure out that the game doesn't.
Oh, yeah, some of the hidden stuff that they have.
Yeah, all this hidden stuff. Like, it just seemed like this game contained multitudes and was, like, everything we talked about Metroid, like, times 10.
Also, think about the first time you see, like, Ridley or Kraid in this game. And, like, Ridley and Kraid in Metroid 1 are, like, this big, like, the side of your thumb or whatever, tiny little thing. And then they come out and you're just
the first time you fight Kraid, you're like,
what the hell is going on?
Other side-scrolling action-adventure games have raised the bar into the ghouls and ghosts of the world. Like, you kind of expected impressive bosses, and Super Metroid delivered that with these really cool, well-designed, impressive bosses. Especially, like, giant Kraid. I mean, come on.
It was just, like, huge, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember showing off that Kraid boss to my friends. Be like,
yeah,
oh, come over and look
you beat the little fake Kraid, and you're like, whoa, that seemed like way too easy.
Yeah.
But no, it's just a little baby fake Kraid. There's just a real Kraid that you fight later and use parts of his body as platforms so you can kill him.
The whole game is just incredibly considered. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was one of the last times, maybe before Super Mario 64, where, like, Nintendo was telling everybody, this is how it's done. This is where everybody was really following Nintendo's lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to think they polished this game forever, because all those little details aren't things that just get done easily.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many just weird surprises in the game, like when you fight the dragon boss in the lava pit, and, you know, you fight him and you can't kill
him with
your
weapons. Is that the one the skeleton jumps out of the...
Yeah, you can't kill him with your weapons. You have to, like, push him with your weapons until he falls in the lava, and then you think you're done. But there's the bubbles that float around past you, but, you know, in the lava, you're like, what's that? And then his skeleton attacks you, and you're like, oh my god, I'm going to die. I'm out of health. I don't have any missiles left. But, you know, no, it's just for show. It's just like a grace note attack. And I kind of wonder if they got that idea from Rondo of Blood, which came out the year before.
Yeah,
and
every boss
all
like
the bosses,
has death blow.
All the bosses have, like, this non-fatal death blow.
Right.
Like, they can't actually kill you with their
final
moves.
It looks like it hits you, but it doesn't actually hurt you.
Right, yeah. Like, oh my god, the Wolfman just, like, blasted me with fire. I'm dead because I'm already out of life. But no, it's just for show. It's cool. And this is exactly like that. But you know, I hadn't played Rondo of Blood at that point, obviously. And, you know, even so, you know, things like that still would have had a great impact. And the fact that, you know, when you kill, is it Dragon? The sea dragon? Once you destroy it, its little babies come and mourn it and then disappear. You're like, wow, what did I just do? Did I just sound horrible?
You monster.
It was near before there was near.
Such a good game.
Or, like, you know, the battle where you're fighting, is it Ridley is flying at you in the screen and you have to just survive until, like, 30% health or something until Baby Metroid comes and saves you? Or is that...
You're mixing a lot of things up. So Ridley flies at you
in
the introductory battle.
Screeches at you.
Yeah. You have to basically... You're trying to keep him from abducting the Baby Metroid.
Right.
And you can't. But there are two ways that battle can go. He can either drain your health down to 30% and then he flies through and escapes. Or you can actually shoot him and avoid his attacks until he, like, starts to change color and drops the Baby Metroid, and then he freaks out and flies off and does the Mode 7 thing. So that's, like, victory. I mean, either way, the outcome is the same, but you can feel good at least that you actually fought Ridley to a standstill with just your little short-range pea shooter. I definitely
fought Ridley to a standstill.
I've done it a few times, and it's very satisfying, but it's kind of tedious because you have to perfectly avoid the jumps.
Challenging battle.
It's funny. You know, I told my weird origin story with Metroid that's found on the side of the road. Super Metroid was another one where, like, my older sister, she would always watch me play games. Occasionally, she would try a game, but she wasn't, like, a super gamer. But, like, Super Metroid, she was watching me play it. She's like, this game looks fantastic. She started playing it, got really into it. Eventually bought her own Super Nintendo just to play Super Metroid.
Nice.
And she was like convinced she wanted to do everything and get the best ending. And I was like, well, yeah, that's really hard to do, because to get the best ending, you have to get 100% and beat it in under, like, I don't know, 5 hours or something. Maybe under 1 hour.
I think it might be under 3 hours.
It's a very, very difficult thing. And I got the, like, Nintendo put out player's guides, and I had the Super Metroid player's guide. She, like, borrowed that and went to her room and got the best ending in Super Metroid, which I've never done.
Wow.
And I remember just like, oh my god. So, like, it's when I think of Super Metroid, I think of my sister who got the best ending in Super Metroid.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. That's female empowerment. That's why Samus is important.
Well, and it showed me that, like, a really good game could, like, bring a person into gaming in a way they had never been brought in before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always something. That was also a very, almost a perfect game for Nintendo of America to release during Play Aloud time. Because, like, 1994, they had a lot of stuff lined up, including Super Metroid. But this is, like, the perfect sort of moody, mature-ish sort of game. Pretty good for that.
It had cachet. You know, if you were a Genesis person, which I started out as a hardcore Genesis fan, this was the kind of thing that might get you to buy the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because it got 10 out of 10 everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, I believe when EGM did its first greatest games of all time. I think the first time Tetris won, but then the second time Super Metroid won.
Well, and it still holds up. You know, there are some Super Nintendo games you go back, you're like, in, you know, in this 2021, would you still play through this? You would still play through Super Metroid.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I really miss about this game that they've abandoned in the sequels is that it's so deliberate in the pacing and the movement. Like, Samus has this weight to her, and everything feels kind of built around the, you know, the, it's focused more on exploration, and there are definitely some intense shootouts, some tough battles, like the ghost pirate that attacks you, and if you try to use super weapons against you, it freaks out and basically you'll lose. So, you know, it really kind of challenges you to sort of work within the boundaries of Samus. But, you know, starting with Fusion and then especially with Zero Mission, they said, let's make everything faster and more, you know, decisive and incisive. And, you know, I really like Zero Mission a lot. But
it's my secret favorite Metroid.
It's a great remake. But I do miss the way Super Metroid just has that kind of sluggishness. And I know that's, like,
yeah, there's a kind of deliberate animation. And I like the way how they took all the gameplay of Metroid and, like, refined it, deepened it. You know, things like the wall jump and the space jump feel really good. And it still has kind of the weirdness of Metroid, but it feels a little more responsive and a little more, you know, thorough.
Yeah, something. Dread is definitely going for the Zero Mission style, like, speedy gameplay and, you know, doing a lot of the Samus Returns parrying and countering and that sort of thing, which I don't know how crazy I am about that, but I kind of feel like they missed a bit of an opportunity. This is the post-Dark Souls world, and I think that series, if anything, has shown us that deliberate pacing and a very measured approach to combat can work. And I was like, I would love for Metroid to go back to more of that style where Samus has that sort of, you know, inertia to her, and you have to really kind of work around that. But it seems like they're going for much more of a zippy action game style.
And where Samus looks heavy and not just like a skin-tight sort of robot suit.
She's wearing a big suit of armor. She should be.
Right, yeah.
I mean, she really felt like she's an astronaut going here and got weight to this pressure that it feels like you're really going into the depths. Like, you feel the gravity in this game.
Well, and having your ship, actually, Super Metroid, kind of defines the way you relate to this world, too. You have this solace, you have this place, you know, it's a little different.
Well, Samus gets bulkier as the game goes on.
Yeah.
Because you start with kind of, like, the stripped-down Metroid suit, with, the small shoulder pauldrons and everything. But then you get the gravity suit, and it has the big, I guess, gravity generators or whatever on her shoulders. And she just becomes bulkier and gains more power. But, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive, I guess, like...
I've never realized the shoulder pads were gravity generators.
I don't know if that's what they are.
I thought they were cool 80s shoulder pads.
They're tied to the gravity suit.
Like Grace Jones style shoulder pads.
But I mean
that maybe so. Do you know that Grace Jones doesn't have gravity generators?
Grace Jones would make a great Samus in my Metroid.
Yeah, actually, yes. Yeah. I'd be all into that.
The thing is, the Super Metroid gave you such an expanded vocabulary of mobility. like with your grappling gun, your high jump boots,
space
the spring, like the being able to jump while you're in the morph ball, the spider.
The high jump is amazing. Oh yeah, it's
just
too.
It just felt like the whole world just expanded in such a vibrant and cool way. And now, even like when you're doing dashes and flying across, and you're like skimming over things that would sink if you missed the jump, and it feels really just satisfying.
It also has like physical spaces that you haven't really seen in Metroid games since. Like when you get to Meridia, the underwater zone, there are just like cavernous rooms, and they have multiple paths and multiple exits and lots of nooks and crannies to go into, and they don't really do that with the room design anymore.
Yeah,
at least not that I can think of. Can you think of any like that off the top of your head, Ray?
No. No, not really.
I mean, even Samus Returns, which is based on Metroid 2, which did have some of those cavernous spaces,
yeah,
really kind of broke those up and divided them down, so you don't have just like these huge rooms that you can kind of maneuver around. And I you know, there's a lot of stuff like that in Super Metroid that really changes the way you relate to the game.
That's what's really missing in Fusion. I really like Fusion, but it doesn't have any of that.
Yeah, there's a few things missing in Fusion. There's a few things that Fusion does really well, too. But
storytelling.
It's definitely a big change from Super Metroid, despite being, you know, very much cut from the cloth of that game.
The idea of storytelling in Metroid, though, is like so weird to think about. Like, because the first few games, the storytelling was all environmental, or like reading the manual and then kind of like projecting it onto the game.
Well, Super Metroid has more.
Yeah, and it's got text.
If you look at the progression, like then Metroid Fusion, then Other M. So yeah, the less is more, maybe, in the world of Metroid.
Yeah, like absolutely. I think they did a really good job of being very like sparing with the details, but giving you enough to be able to build off.
Like in Super Metroid, for example, you find those little weird aliens who teach you moves, and that's like visual environmental storytelling. Yeah. It's not like a long soliloquy from each fucking alien.
Samus, you are now authorized to use your spark beam jump.
Right.
The Chozo statue attacking you at the end of Super Metroid.
So good.
Oh. And at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple. There's one that attacks you at the beginning when you first get the missiles, I believe.
Morph ball, maybe? Yeah,
it's very early on.
But nonetheless, the first time you see that thing and it stands up, you're like, wait, no, what?
You're my friend. You're supposed to give me
just
powers.
Give me the thingy bow. It's like, no.
But yeah, then when you get the space jump, you have to fight another one down in the fire zone, North Air, or Ridley's Lair, whatever it is.
God, that game is so good. That's a game so good.
But then there's the Chozo statue that helps you by carrying you as a morph ball through a passage that you couldn't get through on your own. Yeah, the game just constantly leaves you not knowing what to expect. You encounter something and you experiment with it, you interact with it, but you don't know how it's going to turn out.
The Kraid boss fight is still one of my favorite fights in that entire series, where you have to like figure out the pattern and stand in the right place. That's so good.
But I think, you know, Super Metroid is one of the greatest games ever made. Like, it would not, you know, it would not offend me to put in my top 10 of all time. It's that good. It really is. So if you haven't played it, everyone should track it down and play it.
Yes, we've spoiled all the good stuff, but you'll still enjoy playing the game. It's about the experience, you know?
The gameplay of that really just sings, though, even today. I mean, maybe I don't like the shoulder button usage for the diagonals, but
it works.
It's fine.
It works. It's
Yeah, and you can change around the controls and how they work, so you do have some customization. But I think the shoulder buttons are a good compromise for being able to aim consistently on a diagonal.
Considering how much you have to do in that game, the controller is well used, I feel.
And, you know, they carry that forward to Fusion while kind of streamlining it, so basically the shoulder button, you have one shoulder button that locks you at a diagonal, and the other activates missiles, so you don't have to constantly fumble with the select button. You can basically go from shooting to firing missiles, with just the press of a button, and you can either hold it down or you can tap it to alternate. So
how many of us reviewed Fusion? I reviewed it. Did you guys review it?
I was still a baby, not yet in the in the world.
I think I gave it an 8 or 8.5. I'd have to look back.
I didn't play it until after Zero Mission.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When I took it from a cart at my job at Fred Meyer, the not-for-resale version. Someone just left in a cart. I was like, okay.
I mean, it came out, the same time as Metroid Prime, so I guess this is super exciting. We should talk about, like, when these were announced, and it was, like, a huge rebirth for Metroid.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot like the Dread thing. It's like, oh, everyone's expecting Prime, but here is also the portable one, the new portable.
And, like, I was nascent games journalist back then, and I remember it was, like, too much all at once. It was like, oh, my cup runneth over. You give me two new Metroids that are very different, and I don't know.
Were you on gamers.com at that point?
I was freelancing for EGM, I think. Okay. Maybe I was full-time. What year did those come out?
2002,
November.
I was full-time at EGM by that point. Right. And I was super excited because I got, like, preview review builds in lockboxes back when Nintendo would, like, send you a Game Boy Advance that was, like, physically encased in steel with the cartridge in it.
You were not supposed to take those out of the office, which I did not realize.
Maybe I did. And also, we had Metroid Prime preview lockboxes. Like, a GameCube encased in steel, and I reviewed both of them, and they had Link stuff. You would, like, link between them. You get the Metroid Fusion suit in Prime, and I gave Metroid Prime a 10, and I gave Metroid Fusion, I believe, an 8.5, and I love both of them. Obviously, I like one more than the other, and Metroid Fusion did disappoint me a little bit in that it didn't have, like, the gameplay scope of Super Metroid, but it did have more narrative, and I thought the narrative was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed by how talky it was.
A lot of talking.
But, you know, yeah, looking back, you know, I came to appreciate the fact that it kind of, you know, strings you along and forces you to sit through all this dialogue so that when you break away from that and kind of do your own thing, it does feel very liberating, like I finally set myself free. So I appreciate that. That's interesting.
But it did feel like a tangent. Like, it wasn't, like, you know, I felt like the progression we saw from Metroid to Super Metroid to Metroid Prime... Fusion felt like kind of like the B series. And I liked that it was different and smaller and weirder. But yeah, Prime was definitely the mind-blowing, world-changing thing that almost didn't redefine the Metroid franchise for me. It redefined, like, first-person action adventures.
You could say shooter.
Shooters. But it wasn't the shooting that made Metroid Prime so good. Really,
no, actually, the shooting was kind of bad.
Yeah, it was actually the level design, the progression... the way the world unfolds to you. And the music.
And definitely the artifact hunt at the end. Okay. That was really cool.
Metroid Prime 2 has a much worse hunt for keys at the end of that game. But Metroid Prime was a mind blower. And, like, at that point, we didn't expect GameCube to have stunning audio-visual
good
stuff.
Games of any kind.
Well, just especially, like,
I mean,
a good-looking first-person game.
Why wouldn't you expect GameCube to have good-looking games?
We didn't expect to have good-looking first-person action-adventure games.
It was power almost on par with Xbox. Not quite, but definitely more powerful than PS2.
Because most of the games were being developed in Japan, and Japan wasn't that adept at first-person games back then, and this game wasn't developed in Japan. It was co-developed between Retro and, like, a Japanese producer.
Yeah, it was
like
in Texas, where all the cool first-person shooters came from.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I went to...
Texans know they're shooting, man.
I flew up to Nintendo in Seattle to play this game and interview the people before it came out, and I was just blown away. I remember, I didn't think it was going to be this good, and it was.
I don't know, man. I was in college when Prime and Fusion were announced, and we were all excited about Fusion because it was another 2D Metroid, but I was really, really unhappy that Metroid had gone 3D.
It was so different.
Because I've never been good at 3D games, like Quake and stuff. I was kind of good with Unreal, but it was just so weird with a GameCube controller to be sitting and playing a first-person Metroid. I could never wrap my head around how, like, it didn't work for me the way that
it
meant.
You never got into it?
No, I couldn't. I just skipped the Prime series because I looked at that. It's like, this doesn't feel like the Metroid I want. This isn't the experience I'm looking for.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't know. Metroid Prime definitely kind of, I think, gets less good as it goes on. Once it becomes much more about shooting and you're constantly juggling on the little camera stick to, I guess, camera stick to switch your...
C-stick.
The C-stick. You're like, oh, well... this space pirate has to be shot with this gun. It gets a little, I don't know, kind of a little long in the tooth. And then there's the artifact hunt.
I didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome. The artifact hunt is not great. But, like, at the time, you know, I wasn't the only person to give it a 10. And, like, it was a long time ago, and it felt new, it felt different, but it still felt like it had the aesthetic DNA of Metroid and the exploration of Metroid and the cool bosses of Metroid.
I thought the UI though was really cool. The fact that it looked like you're inside of her helmet and mm-hmm. it's got that curvature to it. So it,
and it's weird to think that scanning felt new and exciting. It was like, oh, I could scan stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it definitely was cool at putting you in Samus in terms of like what would it be like to be inside this cool spacesuit. I thought that was neat. But I could not get over the shooting was so weird.
That said, I don't think this holds up as well as it used to. I think 20 years has been a long time, and
there's been a lot of FPS.
When I return to Metroid Prime, I usually just return to the soundtrack. I also felt like the franchise had diminishing returns as we get to Metroid Prime 2 Echoes and Metroid Prime 3 Corruption.
Well, 3 was better than 2, I would say.
2, I mean, the problem with 2 is it's scant. There's only 3 environments, and the second one is terrible. The swamp is terrible.
Yeah.
And there's the key hunt at the end. But I do think the third environment for Metroid Prime 2, the summit? It looks like Tron. It's like the best thing. It's actually the secret best level of any Metroid Prime.
Is it secret, though?
It is a secret, because nobody got that far, because the Dark World. Like, the Dark World of Metroid Prime 2 is, like, a complete nightmare. It's like, we hate you, we want you to have no fun.
3, I think, is a lot better than 2. It's much more direct.
3 is story, and there's too much of it.
It's not as bad as other M.
People talking.
There's not as much talking as you seem to be saying there is.
There's any talking is too much talking for a Metroid.
Also, by the time it's not that bad. By the time Corruption came out, it didn't look very good.
Well, it was on Wii. What did you want?
It's very brown.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some problems with the game. You know, I don't like the fact that it's all broken up into individual planets, because you just can't have any connections between the spaces, which was, you know, that was one of the real pleasures of Super Metroid and also Metroid Fusion, was like saying, well, there's these, you know, realms, these areas, yeah, and they stand apart, but wait, I figured out a way to go from one to the other, and you can't do that with Metroid Prime 3. And also, like, I feel like it gets really contrived when there's, you know, these ancient ruins and stuff, and you have to basically destroy them, and then your reward for that is getting a missile that only Samus can use. It's like, I don't know. Like, if you stop and think about the whole game design too long, you're like, well, they're doing a lot of things that the Metroid series has done, but they're not putting a lot of, you know, a lot of rigor of thought into how this actually works and fits into everything. So that disappointed me a bit.
Yeah, I think looking back, you know, Fusion to me was overall a better Metroid than either Metroid Prime 2 or 3.
I agree, yeah.
And then Zero Mission, which you brought up, is spectacular.
It is. Like,
and it's the kind of thing Nintendo hasn't done a lot, where they remake a game and add a lot of content to it. I loved it. I think I gave it a 9.5 in EGM, and it is probably, if I like had to go play a Metroid, like Super Metroid or Zero Mission would be the Metroid I would play.
Yeah. Yeah, I held that up at the time as like, this is, you know, peak remake right here. Like, this is as good as a remake gets. And I feel like it's been eclipsed since then by Tactics Ogre. The Tactics Ogre remake was like...
The one for PSP?
Yes.
That is a really good version.
Like, taking the original game and, you know, giving you that experience, but then adding so much to it and reworking some of the more frustrating elements. It was great. But, you know, prior to that, it was definitely Super Metroid. Metroid Zero.
The small modernizations they did to it just make it way more playable. And I think that Zero Mission game should come out again for some other platform, really.
I agree. You know? Besides Wii U Virtual Console, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Don't you wish you had kept all your games on Wii Virtual Console and not moved them over to Wii U Virtual Console?
Yes, I've lamented that on the show before.
I mean, Metroid Pinball is really fun.
Okay, don't bring a Metroid Pinball.
All right, let's go to bat for the underappreciated games. Okay, so yours, Shivam, that's Metroid Prime Pinball.
I liked Metroid Pinball a lot.
Well, it's great.
I like Sonic Spinball too. So I love these kind of weird relicensed versions of like taking a character you know and putting him in a pinball game.
What's the alligator pinball game for Game Boy? That's pretty good.
Tailgater?
It's pretty good.
No, sorry. Revenge of the Gator.
It's pretty good.
It is. It's by Hal.
One of the better Game Boy games.
Look, man, pinball is fun, and it's fun to put it into Metroid. I mean, it's not the most spectacular pinball game you've ever seen in your life, but it was fun to play, and it traveled well.
It's definitely not the worst Metroid spinoff.
No.
What is the weird Metroid spinoff where you're, like, fighting each other, and you're, like, bounty hunters?
Hunters, yeah.
Bounty hunters? That doesn't...
No, just hunters. Metroid Prime Hunters.
That does not exist. That game, I'm going to strike it from the record. Never existed.
Was... Okay, but guess what still exists? Federation Force.
That's right.
No, it does not exist either.
I'm going to bat for that one.
What?
Because it's not a Metroid game.
Who do you play as?
You play as some random dude from the Federation.
Is this 3DS? It's the worst box art I've ever seen. Like, I'm just 3DS, pulling this thing up.
It's like, looks like...
Nobody bought that game.
No one bought that game. No.
Who's even in it?
I have no idea.
Who are those people?
Literally, the worst part of it is...
The Federation Force!
Samus is in it, but she's, like, been corrupted by Phazon, and she's the final boss.
What?
That's bad.
None of that.
It reminds me of the thing I forgot to bring up earlier. Back to 1987 Metroid. The art in the manual is, like, this weird, super playful, goofy kitty art.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always like, they should revisit that world of Metroid. Like chibi, super deformed, Metroid.
We just recorded an episode on game manuals yesterday. And I have that with me in my luggage, that manual.
As a kid, I remember being offended. I was like, this doesn't match the game.
It was super fun.
Oh, I wanted to be on that episode.
It's very, like, wacky Famitsu, like, comic book or something.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they almost did that with Zero Mission. Remember the prototype screenshot of it?
Right. Oh, my God, dude. I'm reading the Wikipedia about Federation Force, and it's like a cooperative first-person shooter. That's exactly what I wanted.
Was it developed in Japan?
No, it was developed by...
Next Level.
Yeah. Wow, well, they're good people.
Yeah, but that sounds awful.
It was a misstep, for sure. Because, like, at that point, Metroid already has a reputation of being, like, the, you know, the quote-unquote mature Nintendo franchise that all the American cool bros like. But for some reason, they just thought, hey, let's just make this for 3DS, make it kind of kitty. There's the word. And
so was it a sequel of sorts to Hunters?
Yes, no, of sorts.
It's a standalone game set in kind of the Metroid Prime continuity.
Yeah.
But it's not meant to be Metroid. This was part of Nintendo's brief little flirtation with co-op multiplayer four-person games.
Yeah.
You also had that Zelda game, Triforce Heroes.
Give me some Four Swords.
Triforce Heroes.
That doesn't count.
This was better than Triforce Heroes, I'll say that. But the idea was just that four people could team up and be like a little squadron running around. Solving environmental puzzles, beating space pirates. If you approach it from the direction, like, realizing this is not another Metroid game.
It's more for the Pac-Man versus crowd.
It's not even that. It's just a separate...
It's a spin-off.
It's a separate game experience, a distinct game experience within the Metroid universe that's not trying to be a Metroid sequel.
The fact that the word Metroid is not in the title, telling.
No, it is.
It's Metroid Prime Freedom Force.
Whatever. Freedom Force is superheroes.
Would you be excited for a remake of this game?
No, I don't think that needs to happen. But I do think
such
this
a
game
diplomatic
was,
answer.
I don't think not require.
I think the game was greatly maligned and really took a beating that it didn't deserve. It's not a bad game. It was just, like Ray said, really spectacularly misaimed.
Well, yes. They put Metroid in the name, though. That was the big problem.
Weirdly,
well, even I would say if there had been another Metroid game of some sort within any sort of, you know, proximity to the release of this, if it had, you know, like, come the year after Metroid Dread, no one would be like, how dare they? But this is one of those things where that's what we... It's kind of like with, you know...
With
some of the Mega Man games, how they canceled a bunch of stuff, but then we got bad box art Mega Man and that fighting game, and people were like, well, F you, Capcom, how dare you?
Remember the Mega Man game that was like Little Big Planet? That didn't come out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like,
universe, that was
about it, you had Other M in 2010, and then the next Metroid in 2016 is Federation Force. Yeah. Like, really?
And I'll say, for me, Federation Force seemed tainted a little bit by Hunters, and, like, am I seeing out, or did a free demo of Hunters come loaded with your 3DS? Like, preloaded?
No, it came on a little packet. Yeah.
But it was free.
Yes.
It was free.
And everyone had it.
It was a demo.
And it wasn't great.
No.
And I think that everyone getting that and it not being great kind of, like, damaged the brand slightly for me.
Of Metroid?
Yeah. It was like, oh, why did they use Metroid for this? Like, it could have been anything. Like that Hunters game could have been anything.
Yeah.
Sure.
But so, I don't remember people being that down on that demo.
Oh, none of my friends liked it. No one bought the game. No one was into it. It didn't do good for the franchise.
Yeah, but I know who your friends were at the time, and they were all like, DS, pfft. I've seen your social media posts. Where you're like, PSP is going to spank the DS. Well, that sure didn't happen.
I wish this podcast had a visual component.
Like, I enjoyed. I was really into my Pandemon. I was very into PictoChat.
Yeah. Where are you at on Other M? Ninja Gaiden's Metroid.
I played an hour of it and eject pod out the door. I don't need my superior officer to tell me to turn my Varia on. Thank you.
You're authorized to use your Varia.
I'm just going to sit here and die until my daddy tells me to turn the Varia on.
That is a game that should not have had any story whatsoever. If they had just jettisoned the story into space and just let you run around in that, like, kind of Team Ninja action,
to go from a Super Metroid and Zero Mission to this,
it's a fall. Weird. It looked weird. Like, Samus' melee attacks were weird.
Well, and we were all there, and like pre-release, we were like, I don't think this is what we want.
Remember how excited we were when we saw it at E3?
Yeah. No!
When they first announced it? When first thing came up for it, the trailer came up? Yes. Everyone lost their freaking minds.
This was after Ninja Gaiden 2 for Xbox, right?
Sure.
Have you played Ninja Gaiden 2 on Xbox?
I don't think people were like, oh, it's a Metroid game, but I've played Ninja Gaiden 2 for Xbox, therefore I don't care.
So I played Ninja Gaiden and Ninja Gaiden 2. Ninja Gaiden is fantastic. Ninja Gaiden 2 fell off hard. It was not good. It wasn't finished. And gave me pause.
But you still had that expectation, I think, in the back of your head, like, oh, Nintendo's going to guide this along.
Right, exactly.
Nintendo's going to keep them on the straight and narrow.
It was the same producer who had brought Metroid Zero Mission.
Yes, but it also had too many other hands in the
plot. Yeah. It's just the Team Ninja stuff was fine. It was the story stuff. Like, that's what, for me, that's what damaged the brand.
The story was bad, and there's too much of it.
Like, this is finally Sakamoto got a chance to tell his story and his vision of Samus, and I think everyone looked and said, oh, we don't like this.
No, thank you.
I also think part of that was to blame for the guy who from the CG movie studio was also leading a lot of that story direction, and it's just like, you should just stick to the movies.
I imagine if one were to revisit Other M now, the actual gameplay portions are probably better than we remember them being, and I think they were just so soured by the cutscenes and the narrative.
And the Wiimote sucked. I can't controlling it on the Wii was really, really difficult.
The point and click detective parts were terrible.
No,
you had to like click a specific pixel in order to advance. That were you able to get through those okay?
I played it less than Shane did.
Okay,
occasionally
the game comes to just like a standstill, and you're stuck frozen in this first person perspective, looking at a scene, and you have to use the Wii remote pointer to highlight something in order to advance. But it's really imprecise. Like, there was one scene where you first meet the Baby Ridley thing, and
there's a Baby Ridley, I didn't get too far.
Yes. Oh, there's a Baby Ridley.
Do you befriend it?
It's not the baby. It's the other baby. It's the
like Mario
Ridley
Kart
baby.
Now.
Yeah.
Is Baby Ridley sassy?
No, it just eats stuff, and it's kind of cute, but it's also scary.
It's like Stitch.
Anyway, so you get to the scene, and you're just, like, frozen, and you have to click one very specific point on the screen, but I sat there for like 5 minutes, and I feel like I clicked every single pixel on that damn screen without anything happening. It was really, really frustrating and really put me off the game.
Yeah, no one wanted Metroid to be like a old school adventure game pixel hunt. That's not a thing we wanted.
It was Find the Difference game. Mom loves it.
So, did you finish this game?
I didn't. I didn't get to the end, but like I probably got like 4 hours into it.
I mean, I even talked to someone who finished it and asked them, like, do you think there's a salvageable game in there? Like, could you remake
this?
No, like,
if you jettisoned, like I said, the story and got rid of the point-and-click scenes, you have a pretty darn good action game interpretation of Metroid. It's actually, like, I've said from the start, like, it plays great. It's not quite, you know, Super Metroid, obviously.
Just the trappings.
But as, you know, kind of like this fixed camera perspective, 3D action thing, you know, and you have like this weird mechanic with your missiles where you have to like shake the Wii remote to recharge your missiles.
There's no more heroes?
But you don't have to sit and grind. Well, no, the thing is you don't have to sit and grind for missile capsules from enemies.
Yeah,
you can basically refill your missiles almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
It's just you have to kind of duck out of the way of combat to a safe space so that you
very
can stop moving around.
Shootery right there, like hitting the button to just reload your gun.
Sort of. It kind of makes you helpless when you're standing there, so you have to balance like firing your missiles, recharging your missiles, and knowing the patterns of the enemies you're fighting. I think it's actually really well done. Mm-hmm. It's just like Ray said, there were way too many chefs, and most of the chefs didn't have any idea of what Metroid
was. Also, if I thought about the pantheon of Nintendo franchises that are beloved, that are considered, you know, AAA franchises, I can't think of a game that is more poorly received than that overall. It is seen as, like, the nadir of this franchise that, like, gets talked about.
Well, there's Skyward Sword.
No, Skyward Sword got re-released. There's lots of like reappraisal. Like, this started a lot of the ideas for Breath of the Wild.
When you fix it,
no, Nintendo's Nintendo's claim is that it gave us a lot of ideas for Breath of the Wild. That's not what people have said that I've seen. People have said, like, really, Nintendo?
Well, I'll say I bounced off Skyward Sword similarly to I bounced off Other M, because like the first 2 hours of Skyward Sword not great, but I do think Other M is
controls
like
suck in that game.
Yeah, well. Yeah,
And the remake takes away a lot of that crap.
Right, yeah, you can play without much.
Fixes controls. A lot of the problems.
Yeah, but I want to pay.
So for me, Other M stands as like one of the worst Nintendo first party titles in a mainline franchise that was supposed to be good that was generally reviled upon its release.
You know what it is? It is the Mario Sunshine of Metroid. The core gameplay is very good, but all the crap around
it's funny. Shiva and I are going to stand Mario Sunshine. Even though they're literally like the worst levels, there's like that one level of Mario Sunshine you literally can't.
I like it, but it has a story problem.
No, you're right.
Too much goddamn talking.
Too much story. You're very true.
And also, like, Flood is overly complicated. I like it, but
it's not really cool, but it
Flood is fine,
bumped a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I've been playing through the old ones with my son, and he's just like, I don't want to play that one.
I think Sunshine's a better game than Other M, but...
Yeah, well, that's not a hard...
That's a low bar.
But it does feel, though, like that Metroid's had diminishing returns over the past decades. Like, it feels like it really hit a peak with, like you were saying, with Prime, with other people besides me.
From Super Metroid...
Prime and Fusion came out on the same day in history.
Super Metroid
Fusion was one day after that, man.
I would argue Super Metroid, Fusion, Prime, Zero Mission, four fantastic games, actually.
Yeah, but then after that, it was just kind of like, and Nintendo's like treating it like an afterthought, and they just keep putting these games out.
It's a bit like Castlevania, where like there are bad Castlevania games and there are bad Metroid games.
Yeah, but
that's why we have Metroidvania.
Like, yeah, there's been a lot of Metroid-esque games that are very good, but was Samus Returns good? I didn't get to play it.
I started it. Apparently, Jeremy says I should finish it.
Yeah, I don't know. Samus Returns is pretty good. There are parts that I think are kind of annoying.
Is it like Zero Mission where it adds new content?
Oh, by far, yeah.
It fixes a lot of Metroid, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's like new set-piece enemies and a lot of things like that. Every path is kind of similar to how it was structured in Metroid 2, but a lot more convoluted.
I do own it.
There's a lot more Metroid-y type stuff in there.
You know what? I'm going to recharge my original 3DS, the blue one, and play this game.
What if you played it on a better system, like a 2DS XL or something?
I don't have a 2DS XL. I have a 3DS LL. Point. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that is. That's the Japanese one, so you won't be able to play the American game on there.
No.
Good enough.
Yep.
I mean, it is an improvement, and, you know, it has actual graphics compared to Metroid 2.
Yes.
Are they polygonal?
It's 2.5D.
I think that's my problem.
It didn't.
It's on 3DS.
They're so tiny on the 3DS screen. You don't really like. There's nothing to be offended about.
It does have the sheen of like, oh yeah, this was made in the West.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you can, I can kind of get over that hump and still enjoy it.
Well, it's better than the Game Boy because literally punching yourself in the face is better than looking at a Game Boy.
I mean, it is an objective improvement. I don't think anybody's gonna
I think it was an interesting choice to go back to Metroid 2 and redo that. I'm glad they did because that game deserves a second look because there's a lot of cool things in there. Like, maybe Metroid's a cool idea, but I think by the time 2017 came around, I was pretty much over Metroid.
You know what I would be behind? A Super Metroid remake.
You know what would be great for a Super Metroid remake? Is if they just published the Super NES cartridges again and gave them to you and said, this game, it's good enough as it is.
I think they should release a perfectly emulated version that's perfect, but also, dude who made Zero Mission, he's still around. Have him like go back and re-envision Super Metroid.
Zero Mission was made by one dude?
But the producer.
Oh, okay.
I see. The director. Whatever.
Wasn't that Sakamoto?
Probably was. He's still alive.
I don't know.
He's working on Dread.
It's super fun, though. It's still fun. That game is great. Like, playing it again on the Super NES Classic has been fantastic. Yeah. Or whatever their SNESicle emulator is.
For me, the Metroid franchise has four fantastic games, and that's enough to make it, you know, a hallowed franchise. But it is, I don't love all of the games. And I think that's, you know, there's other franchises like that that are some of my favorites, but I don't have to love all the games.
Yeah.
Fair. Very fair. Like, I don't know, it feels like Nintendo just, I wish they would take it back to R&D1 and say, like, all right, guys, we're going to bring this home and we're going to try to rebuild it. Because it feels like they just keep farming it out to people. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes, like, Prime, obviously. But it just feels like they don't treat it with the respect that they treat their other first-party titles.
And, like, you know, as much as Breath of the Wild isn't my favorite game design, that game design applied to Metroid almost makes more sense to me. It's very open-ended.
I would love a Breath of the Wild-style Metroid game.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like Metroid is so defined by gating.
But actually, yeah, you're right.
By very carefully designed levels.
I think less so. For me, what I love about Zelda is really well-designed dungeons with unique implement that you then master in the dungeon to solve puzzles and then use against the boss, which doesn't happen in Breath of the Wild.
So
and
maybe
that,
link between worlds then instead of Breath of the Wild.
And like that isn't a part of Metroid. Metroid isn't about that, exactly. You get new powers, you retraverse the world.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much is. That's basically the entire premise of like the Metroidvania thing. Getting power-ups and using those
they're
to not
only
defeat
to the dungeon.
I think the difference, though, is that
The entire world opens up as you...
Right, whereas Zelda, they're distinct to the dungeon. You know, the implements.
I mean, you get them in a dungeon, and then you
generally
beat a boss. You use it to beat the boss, but then you continue to use them throughout the world.
Right.
They become a part of your tool.
Yeah, I feel there's a similarity between the two, but I feel like in Zelda, it's more distinct, and in Metroid, it's more about the world. So therefore, in a Breath of the Wild style environment...
Yeah, but I think the difference, though, is that Metroid's worlds are claustrophobic and very much planned and very, like... Not linear, but they're definitely... There's pacing and timing.
Like, places like, you know, like, the boss areas are that way. But, like, to me, like, Brinstar, the big areas, Norfair, don't feel enclosed. They feel giant.
It's all corridors and shafts.
But it still feels like they're bound on the side.
Like I was saying, you know, the kind of open spaces in Meridia are the really kind of the big exception in Metroid. They stand out. You're saying like all of Metroid should be like that, but that's not the case.
It would be weird. Actually, now that I think about it, maybe Metroid Breath of the Wild would not be a good idea.
Yeah, even I mean, look at Metroid Prime, and you kind of start out in these seemingly open areas, but they're extremely constrictive. And enclosed,
they don't seem that way.
The hub, yeah, like the hub where you first land in Metroid Prime. Like you look around and you're like, whoa, there's like cliffs and plateaus, and I can run around. But really, it's just a hub, and there's doors.
Yeah, but you don't
and
realize
like a
that
platform
there's stuff
you can't get to until you.
There's tons of vertical stuff you don't realize at the first half of the game. There's like, oh, there's things above me.
You know? I mean, you see them, but you can't get there unless you glitch in an early build of the game. But you're meant to like come back later when you have the ability to do the higher jumps.
I don't know. I guess I'm just hopeful for an all new Metroid that I think that they could still improve on it. That it's not, you know, I think we feel like the best of this franchise is far behind us. But I would like to believe that they could improve on it still.
I mean, that's the question I do want to end on is what is the Metroid legacy, and do you think Metroid has a future? Does it need a future? Shane, you seem the most opinionated, so let's start with you.
I think it's really unique in Nintendo's portfolio, and I think that they have a huge opportunity to not just like revisit it, but you know, refashion it and kind of redefine it. And I'd be happy with remakes. I'd be happy with a new one. I feel like there's always been like the core amazing Metroid games, and then like weird spinoffs, and like no more weird spinoffs. I would rather have them like focus on like a real full on new Metroid, like Metroid 5, I guess is what it would be.
That's what Metroid Dread is.
Okay, Metroid 6. So I want a Metroid 6. That's like for a modern console at home. It has like tons of depth, but really like the core gameplay of Metroid, Super Metroid, Metroid Zero Mission. Take those three as your template. Don't try to do 3D first person anymore, even though they did a good job of it.
So not Breath of the Wild is what you're saying.
I mean, no. If it was up to me, it would be a 2D game.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to try to figure out what Nintendo wants to do with the Metroid series, because we're in a world where Metroid and Castlevania have inspired an entire genre of games that are just like phenomenal unto themselves. But what did Metroid have to offer to that? I mean, there's a really cool like environment. There's a cool sci-fi theme. The character is one of the most iconic characters in history. But how do you iterate the Metroid games in a way that will make them still feel relevant in a world where you've got 10 million Castlevania likes out there or Metroidvanias or anything. I don't know. I mean, that's why I kind of want them to take it back home, because like when Nintendo decides it wants to take on a genre, it will just blow it out and reinvent it. I mean, Breath of the Wild was my pandemic game, and that was Nintendo trying to do open world, and it's the first open world game I've ever loved. And I think if Nintendo decided, hey, I want to take Metroid back and I want to try to make a Metroidvania in quotes, but Nintendo-fy it, right? Like really put their effort behind it, I think we could get something phenomenal. I don't know if they will, though, because I think they're still treating it kind of like, hey, we still have this. We still need the character to be relevant for Smash Brothers. So some third party, take it, make a game for it, try not to suck. And I don't like that. I want them to put more heart behind it.
Well, and as Shivan pointed out, the Metroidvanias, you know, obviously Axiom Verge is the most Metroid-inspired, and it's quite good. And the sequel to that is coming later this year. And I think it just shows how close to the original you can strike and still hit gold and have a great game. And
I mean, they nailed it right out the gate. Yeah. It's very few games can say they did that.
Yeah. So, I kind of agree with you. Like, just go back to the well of the thing you created. That's so good. That's so distinct.
And especially now that you've got generations of people who grew up playing Metroid who know what that's supposed to feel like. Yeah. I think they could do a really good job polishing it. Yeah.
I think it's important that Nintendo have a sort of sci-fi adventure franchise in their whole portfolio, and that they keep iterating on it. Like, you know, they have their all ages adventures in Mario.
Why don't they
make F-Zero
work?
Yeah, I know. Seriously, wow. It's different.
I mean, but it's kind of similarly like sci-fi to me. Actually,
Microsoft
has Halo and Forza and Gears of War, which is like another Halo sort of. It's a sci-fi-ish shooter game. They kind of double up on these things. But Nintendo has these distinct sort of worlds that I think are worth iterating on, and Metroid should be one of them.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Metroid's legacy is all the games it helped inspire, and, you know, also giving Nintendo kind of, as everyone has kind of mentioned, you know, something different in the sort of character space that they have and the concept space. I don't know if I'm going to need another Metroid game after Dread, though. Like, I don't know exactly how it's going to go. They've said that it's going to be the last Metroid game about Metroids, which, you know, I don't know. It's kind of weird the way they're describing it, but they've also left, you know, a continuation of the franchise open beyond this. So I don't know what's going to happen.
I have a left field idea.
All right.
Metroid Puyo Puyo. It's a bunch of Metroids.
But all the Metroids, all the Puyos are just Samuses.
No, they're Metroids.
Oh.
Also, how wild is it that Metroid in the original game, you didn't see the titular character until like the very end of the game?
And I remember as a kid like being excited for it. And then when you finally get to them, like, it's all you
it's
fight
just
there.
A freaking jellyfish.
Yeah, and they're, you know, you freeze them and you kill them. But like, they were scary. They were weird. They went on your head and sucked
your
life.
Well, you know the trick to freezing them and shooting them, that's easy. But if you don't know that,
you're just really, really
fast.
Yeah, and like multiple. I remember like
on screen,
five of them are on you. Yeah.
They appear on screen and they'll like kind of circle around if they're obstructed by a platform trying to figure out how to get to you. Like they home in on you.
And they go faster than anything in the game.
They move at this weird angle.
Well, and that's why, you know, at the end of Super Metroid, the giant Metroid that comes and sucks some other brain, it's really, you know, rewarding.
Yeah.
Yep. Stuff.
Metroid, when you first see those jellyfish, they're terrifying, man. Like, they, and you watch your life just going down so fast.
Right, and you don't know how to get it off until you just start flailing around and you bomb it off. But that only gives you, you know, like a second of respite. But, and you have to freeze it in that time.
Well, and I remember thinking they were an interesting enemy because they don't feel malicious. They just feel like that's what they do, and
they're
you just
hungry.
Have to avoid them. Yes.
Yeah, they're weird, just cyber jellyfish that want to kill you.
Yeah. Well, kind of like Alien. They're like, you know, a thing that's going to be used as a weapon. They're like, you know, a tool. Yeah. Good stuff. Bring the Metroids back. Bring Samus back. Give us a new game. Come on.
Put Metroid to Mario Kart.
I don't want to drive as a Metroid.
I want Dread to be as good as it needs to be. Like, it needs to be, you know, Super Metroid, Metroid Fusion, Zero Mission tier to really, like, they've got to do that.
They need to relaunch the brand.
And, you know, if they can do that, then I'm happy with that being, like, the final statement on Metroid, if that's the case. But if not, then I'm happy with Zero Mission being the final statement on Metroid, and everything since then has just been a weird, lucid dream.
I'm hopeful that we'll have multiple attempts in the future to expand on this.
I think we'll probably see sequels, because I think this is going to be the best-selling, best-performing Metroid game ever, just because Nintendo's audience right now on Switch is so voracious.
And hungry for anything.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're much more likely to see future Metroids than Kid Icarus, so yeah, I think hope springs. Yeah.
Kid Icarus 3DS game was so bad.
I mean, you know, maybe that's what Sakurai will do after he finally taps out of Smash Brothers, if they let him.
Make a new stand.
Anyway, yeah, so that's the Metroid episode. Maybe our last word on Metroid, who knows? We'll probably talk about it again someday. But, yeah, that's it. Metroid, good games. Sometimes not good games, but mostly good. And we love the series. Hopefully Dread will be awesome. We'll find out soon. Anyway, this has been episode 403 of Metroid Knots. Yes.
Metroid Knots.
Metroid Knots. That's what we are now. Yeah, I hope you weren't dreading this episode. We are calling it a day now, but I would like everyone to do their bona fides and so forth. Where can we find you on the internet? Retronauts, of course, can be found on the internet in many places where podcasts can be acquired. So please check us out, and you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts. You know, there's subscription bonuses. If you subscribe at the basic level, you get every episode a week in advance at a higher bitrate quality with no advertisements. But $5 a month also gets you bonus episodes for patrons only on every other Friday, as well as Discord access and access to weekend columns by Dynamite Fight. There's like a year and a half's worth of stuff in the archives now, so it's a lot of goodies for your extra $2 a month. So please consider supporting the show. It is entirely listener funded by fine listeners like you. We're like PBS, except we don't have the little head mascot. Shane, what about you? Where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at ShaneWatch, all one word.
I love that you're still ShaneWatch. Didn't somebody make that Twitter account?
Yeah, Nick Sutner made it for me. It was
That was Nick Sutner?
Yeah, when we worked at 1UP, and he was just like, this is when Twitter was new, and like after 6 months, I was like, can I have that account that you made about me?
It was so funny. You can find me on Twitter at ElectroTyler, Gearboy Gears, and I have a podcast about Magic the Gathering called Casual Magic that comes out every Tuesday. I just talk a lot. I'm sure you'll see me places. Listen to the other episodes of Retronauts I've been on. There have been quite a few at this point.
It's true. Right?
I'm RDBAAA on Twitter, on Twitch, Instagram, probably other places. I have a goofing around podcast called No More Whoppers, nomorewhoppers.com. I have a game company called Bipedal Dog. Bipedal Dog on Twitter. All one word. How about that? Okay, cool.
All right, and finally,
haven't made a Metroidvania yet.
Well, someday.
Yeah, that was a joke on Twitter though. Once I made is that the game version of Everybody Has a Novel in Them is every developer has a Metroidvania.
You should make a Metroidvania where you play as the Metroid enemy who just like walks around the edge of a platform and can't get off.
That'd be a pretty fun puzzle game, actually. That would be good on DS, where you have to like draw paths for like, you know, Kirby's Canvas Curse, except it's the what are those things called? The Zoomer.
Yes.
Yeah, the Zoomer.
The little stupid fuzzy thing.
Yeah, you just like worry around the platform going.
Zoom along. Anyway, finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, on Twitter as GameSpite. You can find me doing stuff at Limited Run Games. You can find me doing videos on YouTube under my own name. No aliases here. We're all friends.
Your Limited Run newsletter is beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it.
It's a throwback.
It is. It's a throwback every single time to a different thing. We're constantly throwing back. So many things to throw back to. Anyway, that's it. Metroid Knots is over. Please join us next week for just Retronauts. Until then, watch out for the baby.